from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the media critics of the Singapore summit are running at full speed. But those who understand the threat that North Korea poses to their neighbors and the rest of the world are saying negotiations are preferred over military action. But one or the other will have to be taken. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham joins me with more in just a moment. And the House is going to vote next week on the issue of immigration. What will be in the bill? Virginia Congressman Dave Bratt will be here with those details. Also, what additional trends do we see in yesterday's primary election results? Chris Wilson with WPA Strategies is here with his analysis. And despite an overwhelming turnout of opposition to a bill in California that would ban the opportunity for adults to voluntarily obtain help with sexual identity and behavior issues, well, it passed the Senate committee. Pastor Jack Hibbs, one of those who testified before the Senate committee, will join us later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. President Trump is back at the White House after all eyes were on Singapore as North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump met earlier this week. The summit was the first between a sitting U.S. president and a North Korean dictator. Joining us now with his analysis of what this might lead to is Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. That was a pretty good lead-in.
Well, I want to get your take on this because, as you know, I respect your opinion on these foreign policy issues because I love having you on the program because you study these issues. You know these issues. I saw your comments recently extolling the value of your Democratic colleagues' comments about the threat to of North Korea and how the president needs to be tough. And you're backing the president up on this because you understand how significant of a threat North Korea is.
Well, the biggest threat from North Korea having a bunch of nuclear weapons and missiles is that they will sell it to somebody who will use it. The only reason 3,000 Americans died on 9/11 and not 3 million of us is the terrorists couldn't find a way to kill 3 million of us, and they would if they could. So when I look throughout the world, Tony, at opportunities for terrorists to get nuclear material, weapons, or technology to hurt America, North Korea is on top of the list. So to those who think you can contain North Korea, you're making a mistake. President Trump made a decision early on in his presidency that I'm not going to live under the threat of a nuclear attack from North Korea. I'm not going to allow this man to have a bunch of nuclear weapons and a bunch of missiles because he will sell them or give them away. I'm going to bring this program to an end, and I'd like to do it through a peaceful resolution that's a win-win. To those who want containment, you don't understand the proliferation problem. So I applaud the president for reaching out to North Korea in a tough but win-win fashion, and time will tell as to whether or not this works.
Well, it appears that the sanctions that we've seen in North Korea were part of bringing Kim Jong-un to the table. But the critics are saying, well, the president just elevated this dictator to,
right.
To a higher status. But you know what? It's funny, Senator Graham. I don't recall those same people saying the same about Barack Obama when he went to Cuba.
Well, the bottom line is that the people who are telling Trump what he's doing wrong about North Korea are the ones who got us to where we're at. So I talked to the president yesterday on the plane. He said the haters really can't stand anything I do. I said, Mr. President, on behalf of my view of the world and the American people, thank you for trying to do everything you can within reason to stop a conflict with North Korea. The bottom line is that President Trump is giving North Korea a way out. He's got to convince Kim Jong-un, Tony, that he's better off without nuclear weapons in terms of security of his regime and prosperity of his people than he is with nuclear weapons. Now, how do you do that? You offer him a Colomay deal where you get security guarantees and you get economic assistance to better serve yourself and your people. Column B is a conflict with the United States that will be devastating, but the North Korean regime will come to an end. If it's not that clear of choice, we'll never get this done. North Korea's got to believe in China that Trump is dead set on stopping the development of nuclear missiles and weapons to hit America and is going to bring this program to a conclusion. President Trump has done more in 500 days than every president before him in 30 years.
Let me ask you this question, because this past weekend, on Sunday, I believe it was, you were on with George Stephanopoulos, and you said Congress should authorize President Trump to take the United States to war against North Korea if North Korea does not give up its nuclear weapons program.
Now, some
have criticized you. Yeah, and some have criticized you for that, but I think, in my view, what you were communicating is what needs to be communicated, that the president has the backing of Congress that if the negotiation table does not work, we are serious about eliminating the nuclear threat from North Korea.
Well, that's why I like coming on your show. You tend to follow the events as they unfold. So here's what I told George. The Democrats, Senator Schumer and Feinstein, seven Democrats sent a letter to President Trump detailing what a good deal would look like. Give up all of your nuclear weapons, dismantle your missile systems, turn over all your plutonium and uranium, allow anytime, anywhere inspections, no place we can't go. So here's what I said Sunday. I support that as a good outcome. To get that outcome is going to be difficult. Here's what I'm challenging my Democratic colleagues to do. It's not enough to tell President Trump what he must achieve. You need to help him achieve it. And what would help if the Congress spoke with one voice to North Korea and China and said, listen, we prefer diplomacy, we don't want a war, but if diplomacy fails, we have the president's back in terms of the military option. And if we don't convince North Korea and China that the military option is real, we'll never get a good deal. But if Congress could speak with one voice, as a last resort, we'll use military voice force if diplomacy fails, I can tell you that will affect things in a very positive way.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, my guest. I had to chuckle, Senator, when I saw Iran reaching out to Kim Jong-un, warning him that you can't trust Donald Trump. Apples and oranges. I mean, what the president did in withdrawing the agreement with Iran was an agreement that was done by Barack Obama that was not good for America. This is an agreement I think I have found, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but when this president says something, he sticks to it.
Okay, so that's the key right here. I am like begging China to listen to this guy. Don't miscalculate here. President Trump said he would destroy ISIS. He is. He said he was going to pull out of the Iran nuclear agreement if it didn't get better. He did. He said he was going to rebuild up the military because it had been gutted on Obama's watch. He's done that. He's told North Korea that he's drawn a red line. I will never allow you to have a missile to hit America with a nuclear weapon on top. If you keep going down this road, we're going to have a conflict, and I will bring this threat to an end by military force. China is now backing off the sanction regime. The fact that I know Trump is doing well is that Iran and China are getting nervous. The Iranian deal was terrible. It didn't have any limit on the ability of Iran to produce enrich in the future. It didn't cover their missile program. We gave them $150 billion, and they've used it to wreak havoc on the Mideast. They're threatening Israel. They dismembered Yemen. They've torn Iraq and Syria apart, and Trump understands that's a bad deal. So my point is simple. The Iranians are watching, and if we blink in North Korea, Iran is going to march toward a nuclear weapon because they think we're not serious. If Trump can have a breakthrough in North Korea, end their nuclear weapons program peacefully, win-win for us, North Korea, and the world, then you got Iran in a box. Donald Trump is playing this very, very well. To my Democratic friends, I know you hate him. We got a lot to disagree on. Help him on North Korea. It will help you politically. It will help the world as a whole. Park your dislike for President Trump. Back him up where you can.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Let me address, before we run out of time, Senator Graham, the issue of human rights. Obviously, removing the nuclear threat, number one priority. But North Korea is the most repressive regime on the face of the planet right now, especially when it comes to religious freedom. And I know that's an issue that you care about. And it's one that obviously I care about as well as a member of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. I'm hopeful that part of the negotiations will be that we can go in there and monitor improvements, because to date, the commission has not been allowed in North Korea. And I would hope that that is a part of the pressure applied, that we can monitor not just human rights generally, which we should, but also more specifically on religious freedom.
You know, that's a good point. You've been one of probably the best advocate of anybody I know about why religious freedom matters in any society. You know that human rights matter. We are a country of values, but what we're not trying to do, we're not trying to bring democracy to North Korea. I love democracy, but we're not doing that. We're not trying to unify North Korea and South Korea. We're trying to stop a clear and present danger, according to Dianne Feinstein, threat from North Korea to the United States. Now, what about human rights? Here's what I would do if I were President Trump. You know that video he showed Kim Jong-un of what North Korea could look like?
Mm-hmm.
So North Korea is between China and South Korea. It's in a really good spot for business. I would make sure that part of this deal is to push him on human rights and convince him the following. If you want to reach your potential, human rights is good for business. Abusing people's rights is bad for business. To get all these
Absolutely.
Growth opportunities to come to your country, major companies are not going to invest in a country that destroys its citizenship's rights to worship, to put people in jail just for no reason. Just convince him that human rights is good for business.
Absolutely. And in the research is there that proves that, and fundamental to that is the freedom of religion. That is a key freedom from which everything else emanates.
Well, if you can't worship God on your own terms or not at all, then there is no freedom of an individual to connect themselves with the beyond. I mean, we're here for a limited period of time, and one of the things I love about our country is that you have the right as an individual to choose how to live your life from a religious perspective. I'm confident that President Trump is going to create a win-win situation for North Korea, us, and the world at large, that he's going to bring the Korean War to an end, and that once you do that and you begin to open North Korea up, things are going to get better, and human rights will change just over the weight of time. If it doesn't happen that way, we're going to have a war with North Korea that a lot of people are going to get hurt and killed, but will be the end of their program threatening America. You're going to have peace, or you're going to have war. There is no in-between. Pray for peace. Help this president.
I'm with you, and I want to work with you, Senator, to make sure we get that human rights component addressed as we move forward on the peace.
It's so important for the future of the peninsula. It really is.
Senator Lindsey Graham, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for
Thank
coming
you.
On today. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, as I said, I mean, on the foreign policy front, he is one who studies the issues, and that's why I like to have him on the program. I might get a chance to talk about this later. We had our first meeting of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom yesterday. I'm very optimistic that we're going to see some positive things on that front under this administration, working in concert with this administration, Congress, a lot of positive things. All right, when we come back, a vote on immigration. I mean, this has been an issue that has eluded many administrations. Could we have something coming up right around the corner? Congressman Dave Brad of Virginia is here. A vote is imminent next week, we're being told. What's going to be in it? That's next. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television and social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is false? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate the challenging topics surrounding human sexuality. We are all created in the image and likeness of God, and all people are equal in dignity and value and must be treated with respect. LGBT activists operate on a weak understanding of sexuality and ignore how scientific and empirical evidence refutes their claims. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT, where you can download this important resource free of charge. Again, go to frc.org/LGBT to learn more.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? Family Research Council is here to help with answers and insight from our experts. Our work in Washington, D.C. is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any issue that FRC stands for, issues like life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line. We'll consider your question, and you may also have a chance to be published on our blog. Again, that address is frc.org/askfrc. Thank you for standing with us.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. You know, in my 15 years here at the Family Research Council, one of the issues that I've watched that has eluded Congress has been the issue of immigration. In fact, back in 2005, Bishop Harry Jackson and I wrote a book, Personal Faith, Public Policy, addressing seven of the top issues facing our nation. And wouldn't you know it, they're still the same. And one of those was immigration. And, you know, the administrations have come and gone, and they've not dealt with this. We are on the possibly on the verge of seeing Congress, the House, moving forward with a conservative immigration bill authored by Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte. This is his last term. He's retiring. And there's also going to be a vote on a more moderate compromise measure that's still being put together after weeks of closed-door negotiations facilitated by Republican leaders, driven in large part by conservatives. Joining us now is one of those conservatives, Congressman Dave Bratt. He represents the 7th Congressional District of Virginia. He serves on the Committee on the Budget, and he's a member of the House Freedom Caucus. Dave, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, hey, Tony, great work on this over the years. You're one of the few folks that held true. One of the reasons we always reach an impasse is because we never listen to the American people. That would be very helpful.
So are we there? Do we think we've finally come up with a solution that can move its way through the process?
No, I don't think so. You described exactly where we're at. And so we were put under pressure by 25 Republicans who were working with 200 Democrats. And I didn't misspeak there, right? With Steny Hoyer, they leapfrog over the president, Paul Ryan, McCarthy, everybody, and put leverage on the whole Republican conference because they're in tough seats and et cetera. But they want to do Democrat policy, right? And so they put together a series of four bills. The one that gets the most would win, and that would have been just a full-out amnesty for about 10 million people over 10 years. And that's been well-documented. And so they put pressure on us because we didn't have the votes for the Goodlatte bill, because leadership, I don't think, whipped it hard enough, right? On every other bill, you see some serious pressure being put on people. And that didn't happen on the Goodlatte bill. So now we're going to have the Goodlatte bill come up again because they promised. So that's good. And that probably won't get the votes. And then there'll be the moderate bill. And we'll see if that has the votes. I doubt that'll have the votes either. And the major problem with the alternative, they're going to sell it as being kind of President Trump's four pillars. But all four pillars have been weakened in the bill. It's 1.8 million DACA eligible, and that's where we start off, right? That's the starting bid, and the eligible will be determined by the courts. And so you know where that number is going to go. It's going to blow up to, you know, in the 3 million range at least. And the most important point is it doesn't have E-Verify and full chain migration, et cetera. And so we're going to end up doing this again in a few years, right? If you pass an amnesty, which will be in that bill, you're sending a green light, and the magnet goes on to the rest of the world. You're going to get a surge. And then once folks make it in, right, they know the American people are compassionate, that good people, and we're going to send a signal. Once you make it in here, that's it. You're safe, right? And so we have nothing in that second compromise bill that ends the magnet. And so we're just – it's going to be just the same as Reagan. That was one of his major regrets. And that's part of the reason we're here. Everybody wants to be done with this political anxiety. And instead, we're just going to encourage more problems going forward.
It's political courage that is lacking to address the issue once and for all. It's exactly, in my view, it's exactly what it is. How far short is the Goodlatte bill from having the 218 votes?
Probably 20 short. And the Goodlatte bill, just, you know, I went over that quick. As a reminder, that is the compromise bill, right? The Democrats wanted us to take their 700,000 DACA kids, bring them out of the shadows, give them a pathway to some status where they can have, be in the labor market. And that's what we did. That's in the Goodlatte bill. Then Trump says 1.8 million, and the Democrats still say no. And so why we get further leverage to move further toward the Democrat position is just beyond me when we just won the House and the Senate and the White House on that issue.
Well, it's being driven by moderate Republicans.
Right, right. I mean,
That's the chamber. That's why you can't come to us.
Yep. Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce weighed in. The cheap labor crowd weighed in last week for an additional million people, right on top of the million we do legally. And that's, you know, they're putting out all the talking points now about this, you know, the unemployment rate's so low, we got to do this. But they leave out the point that 10 million people are still not in the labor force at all. And we got to help those folks.
Mm-hmm. There'll always be some excuse, and I just increasingly the political will is not here, and I think you have this the 25 moderate Republicans that you know, pandering to the left in their districts. I do agree with you. I think sometimes, you know, when the conservatives kind of go against leadership, they squeeze them hard to bring them in line.
Right. Yeah,
but you don't see the same thing with the Tuesday crowd, where the which is the that's the group of moderates in Congress. So, what do you think is going to unfold next week?
Well, and what you just said, that I'll just reiterate because you hit it on the head, is political courage. And when the Freedom Caucus weighs in, we take our lumps, right? Everybody comes in and hits us. But when we take our lumps, it's because we're keeping our word. In the promises Republicans made in the Republican platform, right? We hold our leadership and the rest of our conference and ourselves to what we promised, even when it's tough to do that, because that's what we promised. And so unfolding, I think we'll see. It wasn't clear in today's conference. They said they're going to whip that second compromise bill, right? We don't have any text on that. Everybody's guessing what's going to be in it. My guess is once the text comes out, it's way worse than what we imagined. And you have a very educated crowd that's listening right now. Remember, this still has to go through the Senate. And what's going to happen to an immigration bill once it hits the Senate? Is it going to get better or worse?
Yeah.
Right? And so that's a little hint.
Yeah. Well, does a bear sleep in the woods? I know the answer.
Right.
All right. Very quickly, we're out of time. But what do our listeners need to do?
Yeah, well, they need to contact their congressman, write letters with the details of what's in this. When the American people find out what's going on, that'll settle the day, right? That the American people always have a good gut feel. They know they're being ripped off. They're paying the tab. The corporations get cheap labor. The American people pay the tab. That's the new formula. We're working to end that. And then, you know, go to my website, davebratt.com, and I post all sorts of stuff there. There's videos where I explain this in more detail. And people can, you know, get a little bit more in the weeds on the issue.
All right. We'll do that. Dave, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks.
Thank you, Tony.
Congressman Dave Brat of Virginia. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over to his site. All right, coming up next, what do we know about yesterday's election? Chris Wilson joins us to give us an analysis. Don't go away.
Hello, can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television, in social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is not true? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate challenging topics in human sexuality. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
If you think anti-Semitism is a thing of the past, think again. In the last 3 years, over 1,700 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred on college campuses across the country. This new anti-Semitism is disguised simply as opposition to the State of Israel's policies toward Palestinians. But a closer look at these incidents reveal how Jewish college students are being attacked merely for believing that Israel should exist. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/antisemitism.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. On the website, let me encourage you to check that out on a regular basis, because we have resources there for you, leading to FRC, FRC Action, and voter guides and information necessary for you to be an informed and engaged citizen, which is what makes our republic work. And speaking of that, yesterday, primaries were held in Virginia, South Carolina, Maine, Nevada, and North Dakota. So what do we know now that we've been through, I think this is four or five primaries, major primaries? Are we seeing trends? What's happening? Well, to join us to talk about that, Chris Wilson, CEO of WPA Intelligence. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
You bet, Tony. Thanks for having me back.
All right, what are we seeing now from the results of yesterday's election? Any trends that are emerging here in this primary season?
There are. I think there's kind of three untold stories that have been fascinating for me to watch. The first one is kind of this whole, as we went through the special elections, there was this attitude that there was going to be a blue wave. And what we've very quickly seen is there's not a blue wave. And if there was anything, it kind of splashed up our ankles and went away. It is what we've seen, in fact, is Republican turnout has been up in some cases to historic levels, whereas Democrat turnout has really been down. I'll go through just last night. In Maine, Republican turnout was up about 15% over 2014, the last off-year election. In South Carolina, was up about 14% over 2014. In North Dakota, well, there wasn't even really a statewide race. It was up 37%, and Nevada was up 21%. So that just gives you an indication of how excited Republicans are. And then on the Democrat side, I'll just use one state where, as you know, Tony, I do a lot of work in Texas. Democrats had the fewest votes cast in the gubernatorial runoff since 1920. So I do think there's an energy that exists on the Republican side that you and I have talked about over the last few weeks that now that they see Republicans doing something, they're saying, all right, well, I guess Republicans can't actually get things done. And even though there's not been one big victory like repealing Obamacare, there's been a lot of kind of small to medium victories like tax cuts and moving the embassy in Jerusalem and tearing up the Iran deal. And so I think there is an energy that exists. The second thing that I want to dig down
a little bit on that energy there, because I don't want to read too much in this, but I want to get your take on it, because I see this energy as being fueled by the Trump administration and its policies. The things you just rattled off were things that basically the president did unilaterally. South Carolina, Mark Sanford, sitting congressman, defeated by an individual that the president had endorsed. As you said, turnout up 14% in there. Is a part of the fueling of this increased turnout because people are supporting the president in his agenda?
You know, yeah, it's a good question, and it's kind of a chicken and an egg approach. I do think you bring up there's no question the president's done several things unilaterally. The challenge has been that he hasn't been able to get as much done with Congress as he wants, but tax cuts is going to be a big motivator. Mark Sanford is a bit of a unique situation, as you know, and I think the fact that Arrington, who defeated him, did run a campaign that was very, very pro-Trump, and she tried to take Sanford's comment that were anti-Trump and use against him, and then the president tweeted out about 3 o'clock that he wanted to see, basically that he wanted Sanford to be beaten. And so I think that was a little bit late to have a big impact. I would argue that 2 things happened there. One is campaigns matter. And I don't – Sanford ran kind of a lackadaisical campaign that I think would get most Republican incumbents defeated, if not in their primary in the general election. It's a perfect example, a representation that as – I hope, you know, we had this conversation over at your offices with some people that in terms of looking at 2018. This is not 2014. It's not 2010. Republicans have got to run real campaigns to win. And I don't think he did that, and she did. But there's no question that the Trump factor was a process here. But the thing about that factor is you could find 10 other or actually about 8 other races where it didn't play into it. So I don't want to read too much in the Sanford effect, and more than if you take the president being against you, and you run a poor campaign, yes, you're going to lose. And I will tell you where I'm involved in a couple of races on the Senate side. And I'll give you Montana as a perfect example, where Matt Rosendale, great nominee for to run against John Tester, who the president is very motivated to see defeated, as you're well aware. And I think that's a race right. where you're going to see the president have a big impact in a general election. So it is. I think that it can have an effect, but I don't want to read too much into it and say that's the only effect. Several dominoes have got to fall, if you will.
I understand, but the main thing that we're seeing, and we're about out of time, but is that the fact that Republicans are engaged, they're voting, they're making a difference, and they have not checked out, which is what
that's
the
right.
media. I think media wants to happen.
Yeah. Well, the 2 other things that I think are important are Democrats are nominating left-wing liberals that are making the races in November much easier for us. The media tries to paint as, oh, we're nominating a lot of women. Yes, that's true. But if you have a moderate woman and a very liberal left-wing woman, that's the left-winger is winning. And in these Democratic primaries, they're not the Connor Lambs of the world that won up in the Pennsylvania special election. They are nominating far left liberals. And
Go ahead. Go quickly. Go ahead.
I said the third is just we Republicans have got great nominees, and we're nominating. I'm in Nevada this morning where Adam Laxalt just won the nominee for governor, Paul Laxalt's grandson. And it is exciting to see the Republicans that are emerging from primaries. And the media is going to talk about Virginia this morning where the nominee there. Where I think it's – and they will ignore the fact that in race after race, we have had tremendous recruits and great nominees coming out of these primaries. And that's exciting for me. And I think it's going to be – Republicans are going to do surprisingly well in November.
All right, Chris, we got to leave it there. As always, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
All right, folks, don't go away. Big rally in California yesterday in opposition to AB 2943, one of the pastors who testified. Pastor Jack Hibbs joins us next. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? Are you looking for more internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If you answered yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. If you think anti-Semitism is a thing of the past, think again. In the last 3 years, over 1,700 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred on college campuses across the country. Supposed anti-hate watchdog groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center have curiously turned a blind eye to this emerging campus threat, and this new anti-Semitism has flown under the radar. The perpetrators of the new anti-Semitism are primarily the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS, movement and the Students for Justice in Palestine. These two groups disguise their bigotry simply as opposition to the State of Israel's policies toward Palestinians. But a closer look at the language and tactics used by these groups reveals how Jewish college students are being attacked for believing that Israel should exist, or merely because they are Jews. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/antisemitism.
Hello, can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. We've been tracking this because it is an egregious attack on choice, on the First Amendment, on religious freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of association, you name it. It is a bill in California. It's Assembly Bill 2943. Now, this is designed to, a pro-LGBTQ bill that essentially says that no services can be provided to help, and this is voluntary, okay? This is an adult. We're talking about adults, not talking about children, not talking about the schools. We're talking about adults who would seek to gain counseling advice, whether it's, you know, in books or whether it's through counselors, to help them deal with their sexual identity crisis, whether it's homosexuality, transgenderism, bisexual, whatever it is, that it would be illegal for any type of financial transaction to facilitate that type of counseling or instruction. So it could be, and this is what was argued yesterday before the Senate Judiciary Committee, before they voted 4-2 to proceed with the bill, and the hundreds showed up in opposition. It says it would affect, for instance, we had a case in Michigan recently where a pastor, a church offered a class seminar for girls 12 years and older, along with parental advice or parental permission and parents being involved in it, being there physically, dealing with sexual identity issues. I think there was a small fee for the materials. That would be illegal under California's law. Technically, there's concern that a pastor, because he's being paid, if he is teaching on this and someone puts money in the offering plate, now someone says, oh, that's going too far. No, you're not going too far. Now, they're trying to reach a compromise to carve out churches and pastors and religion and different things. But I want to get to the latest on this. And one of the pastors who testified yesterday before the Senate Judiciary Committee is one of our Watchman leaders, Pastor Jack Hibbs, founding pastor of Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, and he joins us now by phone. Pastor Jack Hibbs, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you much. And, it was something that I wish, Tony, every American, and I mean every American, could have been with us in that chamber yesterday, no matter what their political persuasion might be. For this reason, Tony, you know, you had mentioned a moment ago that it was a bill, or it is a bill, soon to be law, that was in favor or is in favor of the LGBT community. Now, let me tell you what we saw. There were those of the LGBT community standing with us in opposition to the bill for this reason, Tony. They said, we want to have the freedom of choice, and you're taking that away from us, because this bill, as you said, would stop anyone of the LGBT community. And remember, the word Q stands for questioning.
Yep.
That they could not, they would be, they, the LGBT community, would be the ones prohibited from seeking out a pastor or a state-licensed psychologist to have their questions answered regarding their gender or their practices, that they may be wondering, am I on the right lifestyle, or maybe I don't feel right about this, I need to seek out help. The bill literally removes the choice from the LGBT community to seek help. This is absolutely remarkable. The Democrats in California claim that they're all about choice and all about freedoms and liberties, and yet this group of people literally decided that they would condemn the LGBT community from seeking help, though they may want it, they would be forbidden from seeking it out. As you said, if any money is exchanged, or if any books, for example, speak on the ability to change. So, Tony, we saw two radical statements yesterday in the author's testimony of this bill. Number one, Tony, he said, please, don't get the wrong opinion, everybody. Listen, he said, trust us. This does not attack the Bible. He specifically called out the Bible. He said, this does not attack the Bible. He said, this attacks any change or conversion therapy attempt to change someone's desires or lifestyle regarding LGBTQ, because as California Judiciary Committee, that responsibility of fraudulent business practice falls upon us to protect the California consumer. Number two, he said, we do not believe, this committee does not believe, that a person who is LGBTQ is capable of changing. There is no scientific evidence. There is no testimony that change can happen. And, Tony, in that room were over 80 young people who had a T-shirt on that said, I've been changed. They have come out of the LGBTQ community. And, Tony, you could see these young people, their hearts were sinking when these images of authority on the bench said, your change is fraudulent. Tony, it was one of the saddest things as a pastor that I have ever witnessed, as our Democrat government here in California condemned these people. It was tragic. It was heartless. And, frankly, it goes beyond liberalism, Tony. This was leftism in full power yesterday.
Some very good points. And I want to address these two points that the committee brought up. But first, I want to go back to something you said about the fact that there were LGBTQ, formerly from that lifestyle, who were standing with the other citizens there opposing these bills. In fact, there was a big rally there at the state capitol. And I understand there is, I think, at least two individuals who were a part of the nightclub in Orlando in which that shooting took place exactly yesterday, 2 years ago, that have since come out of that lifestyle. And they are speaking against this bill because they're saying, if we're looking, we ought to have all options on the table when we're looking at, what's best for our lives. And it's interesting. This is a one-way restriction. You can't come out of the lifestyle. You can have training and you can have counseling to go into it, but you can't have it coming out.
Well, exactly right. California is pushing that from the youngest age in public school that you can go into it. Please consider that. It may be a pleasurable or meaningful lifestyle for you. The moment that child, that kid, that teen, now that adult says, you know what, I think I might have made a mistake. I was confused. I want out. Oh, no. You cannot come out. I mean, literally, friends, Tony, you don't have to make a comment on what I'm about to say because I'm a pastor and I'm not supposed to say what I'm about to say. But in California, if you are a thinking, compassionate, caring citizen, how in the world can you vote for the Democrat Party in California who just showed its colors to condemn those that they claim to protect? And listen, not only did former LGBTQ people testify against it, there were some current LGBTQ people saying, please don't take this from us should we want to change. I mean, it was absolutely the most surreal day that I've been involved in perhaps my life when it came to what I said to a bunch of pastors. We watched a pulpit of politicians step into the spiritual realm and the moral realm under the pretense of fraudulent business practices. And, Tony, they so often said, but don't worry, people, this won't affect the Bible. They kept mentioning the Bible. There was one senator who said that, don't worry, you can go to your pastor and your rabbi and talk about anything you want. This doesn't affect them because they're not paid to talk to you. There's no exchange of money. And I wanted to jump out of my chair because, Tony, when I'm at church or a rabbi's at church, we're being paid by the hour. We actually have a job. Right. Are they going to interpret the law that way, that, Pastor, you just violated this law because somebody came to you, you were being paid, and you encouraged them that there's hope in Jesus? Remarkable.
Well, it shows me, number one, there's a lack of understanding of the Bible. They're saying that this does not apply to the Bible because this is about people who would be transformed out of this, their sexual desires would be transformed so that they would come out of that lifestyle. Well, they don't understand the Bible because the Bible leads to transformation. That's the Word of God.
Yeah.
It transforms, and it transforms those who are in, whether they're in whatever type of sexual immorality that they're in. If they're truly transformed by the Word of God, they're going to come out of that lifestyle, whether it's adultery, whether it's promiscuity, whether it's homosexuality, whether it's bisexual, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If they are truly touched by the Word of God and they surrender their lives to the Lord Jesus Christ, they are called to live according to his standard of morality. And that means a transformation is going to take place.
Look, the Word of God, as you and I know, is powerful. And I had quoted 1 Corinthians 6 in the press conference. And I just said, with all compassion that I could muster, and I hope more through Jesus, I said, look at all of you. We may not have been engaged in the LGBT community before we met Jesus, but maybe we were adulterers or fornicators or drunkards. And Paul the Apostle said to the Corinthians, and such were some of you, but you've been washed, but you've been changed by the power of God. And the crowd cheered. And why? Why did they associate with that? Because we're all sinners. We have all sinned. But the government, and I hope there's pastors listening right now, that the government has stepped into our pulpits and have said, you cannot speak to someone who comes to you about change regarding sexuality or their desires. You can't speak to them because your Bible doesn't work. Your Bible is not powerful. And if you believe in a God or gods, he cannot change. You are condemned for the rest of your life in the LGBTQ world. Now think about it. We have suicide rates, Tony, of over 40% in that community. And you could feel the air being sucked out of the room. You could feel the hope being sucked out of that chamber when they said, as a state power, change is not possible. In fact, what the chairwoman suggested that to think that you have changed is possibly a delusional belief. It was literally condemnation from the authorities of this state. And, Tony, the only thing that we can do, which is a great thing, by the way, is to let these Democrats who rule in all power here in California, let them own these decisions come November. We've got to remind the people of their decisions. We've got to encourage them that they've got to vote these people out. They are destroying one of the greatest states that this nation knows. There's a lot of good people here, but unfortunately, because of either neglect or we're not paying attention, we've elected the wrong people. And something's got to happen. But I tell you, I got on the plane and flew home late last night, and my heart was heavy for the LGBTQ community, because in the days ahead, they're going to find out that the party that says that defends them and is for them is the actual party that just condemned them.
Hmm. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Pastor Jack Hibbs, Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, California, is my guest, talking about another hearing yesterday in the Senate Judiciary Committee on AB 2943, which is an egregious attack on the First Amendment. I want to ask you something, Pastor Jack. When the committee said there is no scientific evidence that change is possible, that it's not possible, did anyone venture to ask them, is there any scientific evidence that there are 52 genders?
No one asked them. And I tell you what, Tony, again, I wish everybody could have watched this. This was an exercise yesterday in, you know, I want to use the word tyranny. We're not exactly there yet. We might be there next week, but we're not there now. But listen, the conversation was so controlled by the chairperson that one of the senators who's on our side, a beautiful, wonderful believer, Joel Anderson, numerous times tried to ask questions of the author, and the chairperson would shut down his question. When he would ask an intelligent question, the chair interrupted him and said, we're moving on with that. We have other things to deal with. And this room was packed. Tony, there were people in the hallway. They had sergeant of arms, in plural, several, managing the lines. 1 hour, I recorded it, 1 hour and 20 minutes of public testimony of change as citizens stood in line, and it fell on deaf ears. They have an agenda.
You are accurate in describing them as leftists, because that's how they operate. Pastor Jack, we're out of time.
Thank you, Tony.
We will continue to track this. Thank you for standing in California as a watchman pastor. Pastor Jack Hibbs, Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. We're out of time. Until next time, you know what to do. Once you've prayed, once you've prepared, once you've taken your stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. for more information on anything you've heard today or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.